Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's January, and that means lawmakers are heading back to the state houses in both Kansas and Missouri. In Kansas, lawmakers will work in the newly renovated state house where a sparkling new visitor center opened last week. And they'll work with a mystery hanging over their heads, which is, will the state Supreme Court order lawmakers to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more on public schools? In Missouri, lawmakers will confront competing priorities. Governor Jay Nixon wants to spend millions more on schools and universities, as well as expand Medicaid. Republicans, meantime, want to cut taxes, and expanding health care is probably not in their wheelhouse. We'll cover both states today, and we begin with Missouri. With us today is State Senator Ryan Silvey. He's a Kansas City Republican. And, Senator, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
State Representative Kevin McManus is a Kansas City Democrat. And, Representative, nice to have you. You too. Good morning. Thanks for having me, Steve. Well, let's begin with a big story my colleague Jason Hancock from the Star's Jeff City Bureau came out with yesterday that talked about the clout that lobbyists have in Jeff City and what he called the no limit legislature. And when he talked about no limits, he means no limits on campaign donations, no limits on gifts to lawmakers. What about it, Senator Silvey? I mean, is this term, the no limits legislature, accurate?
Well, I mean, it's certainly definitionally accurate. I mean, we don't have limits on campaign contributions. There are no limits on, lobbyist-provided meals and that sort of thing. So I think that, I think it's pretty accurate.
Should there be?
I've run for office under both systems, under having limits for campaign contributions and not.
You're getting to be an old man, Ryan. Hate to tell you this, buddy.
I know, not even 40, and I'm one of the, thanks to term limits, one of the older ones down there. But it's interesting. When I ran under limits, we had people shoveling huge amounts of money in. They were just doing it legally. What would be basically legal money laundering.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go to campaign committees. You could have PACs set up. And, we had instances where one super wealthy individual would found and fund over 100 PACs. So the money makes its way in. The question is the public going to be able to know where the money comes from and hold people accountable for it? And so I think that the current system of transparency is better than the limited system where you just have all this money still making it into campaigns, but nobody knows where it comes from.
Kevin McManus, what do you think about this? I mean, Ryan Silvey makes the case for transparency with the present system. Do you buy that or not?
I think the current system's unacceptable, Steve. And mm-hmm. I didn't have the benefit of being around when we had limits, but I think that we've got to absolutely look at ways to change the current system. And I've proposed a bill in the last session to do that. I'll be working on an even more expansive bill this session. Obviously, being in the minority, I don't expect that my bill will necessarily become law. But what I do think is that we've got to draw attention to the issue. And I think that article in the Star really did. And even beyond the limits on donations or on gifts from lobbyists, I think we've got to draw attention to the fact that there's no restrictions on legislators becoming lobbyists immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And from legislators serving as political consultants while in office. And
what about this idea that Senator Silvey just raised, Kevin, this idea that when you do have limits, the money is going to find its way into the system anyway. And I remember the system that Senator Silvey just described, and there was a sense of legalized money laundering. The money would get churned through various committees. Reporters couldn't tell where the money was coming from, and you wound up with a system where you didn't know who the donors were. At least now, arguably, you do know.
I think the way we can address that issue is by two methods. Number one, we've got to clamp down on political action committees donating to other political action committees and stopping those committee-to-committee transfers, because that's how you hide and conceal the location of the donor. But the second way we stop that is to give the Missouri Ethics Commission some actual teeth and give them the authority to not only investigate but to prosecute and to give them funding. And that's what my bill is actually going to propose this session.
Senator Silvey, we talk so many years when lawmakers come in here, there's an expression of interest in sort of giving some teeth to the Ethics Commission. This argument's been going on for decades. Why doesn't it ever change?
Well, first of all, we did do the committee-to-committee transfer in statute a couple years ago, and the Supreme Court threw it out. said it was a violation of free speech. So we can keep talking about it, but the reality is that it's unconstitutional to do that, and we've already tried it. The as far as the Ethics Commission goes, you know, I think we have put more money into the Ethics Commission over the last few years, you know, particularly when we've increased statutory requirements on them. We've given them the money to do that. But like anything else in government, the question becomes, yes, would we like to give them more money? Sure, we would. Do we have more money? No, we don't. And so then the question is, should we give the Ethics Commission more money while we continue to underfund schools? It's very similar to many other arguments. Should we fund this more while we don't fund that? You know, until we have a surplus, I don't know that there's really much of an argument there.
But meantime, the fact of the matter is Missouri is the only state in the country that allows unlimited campaign donations. It allows unlimited gifts from lobbyists. I just begin to wonder, you know, the sense you get from just talking to regular people when they talk about Jeff City, there is this sort of sense that, you know, it's a capital that's for sale. There's an image issue. There's a pall cast over the capital in a sense.
Sure.
Do you sense that too?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I think that, you know, addressing the other side of that issue as far as the lobbyist gifts, maybe clarifying that, restricting it, defining it better would go a long way towards that. I think, you know, going back to a limited situation in campaign contributions, you go back to the money laundering. You know, maybe if we did some higher level limits, you might be able to get a vote in Jeff City that would pass. But I make no mistake, it wouldn't solve the problem.
Can you pass a limit on gifts from lobbyists
absolutely.
As a separate category?
Yeah, I think we probably could do something like that. In fact, we've done that in the past too. But for one reason or another, it's been thrown out by the Supreme Court, usually on a technicality over the entire bill, not because of that provision. So I think there is support in Jefferson City to restrict gifts from lobbyists specifically. And I don't know about the issue the representative raised about the revolving door. I think we've done that as well in some of those broader ethics bills that have been thrown out. But, you know, I think there's room for that conversation. Absolutely.
Representative McManus, you're a Democrat. You're in the minority down there. Are you holding your breath when it comes to the likelihood that some sort of sweeping ethics package will make its way through the General Assembly this year?
Well, Steve, I think if we don't do it, it will go to the voters directly through the form of a ballot initiative. And we've already
one circulating now, right?
Exactly. I think there are actually maybe two. So if we don't do something, I think it's very likely that it will go to the voters directly without us. And I think it's incumbent upon us if, given the popularity of something like that, it would definitely pass. And it's incumbent upon us to actually do something the best we can in the legislature first.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the upcoming session of the Missouri General Assembly. Later on this hour, we'll turn to Kansas. We're visiting with State Senator Ryan Silvey and State Representative Kevin McManus. You know, you all just completed a special session aimed at providing incentives for Boeing to move out here to Missouri to build one of its new airplanes. But the company has opted to build this plane now in the state of Washington, given a vote last week by its union. Was the special session worth it? And I'm wondering, did you ever feel like Boeing was just using states like Missouri as leverage, as a way to win concessions from the union out there?
Well, Steve, I think hindsight's 20/20. I mean, I think we had certainly a suspicion that could have been the case.
Yeah.
And now, in retrospect, obviously, it's looks like the Seattle union has now approved Boeing's changes, so they're going to actually probably be staying there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it was worth it in the sense of getting us out there and competing the best we can. But obviously, we've got a lot of other priorities and a lot of other work to do in the meantime.
Senator Silvey, was it worth it from your vantage point?
Yeah, I think it was. You know, as Representative McManus said, I think we all kind of had a gut feeling that deep down maybe we were being used as leverage. But it was one of those situations where, you couldn't afford to pass it up. Because on the off chance that it wasn't, and then that ends up going to South Carolina or Utah or one of the other states, and we didn't even make a play for it, then we would all regret that.
And it turns out the union vote was pretty close, 51-49%.
Right. It was. Yeah. It nearly did end up going somewhere else.
If that had failed, then perhaps the sweepstakes would have been on. The fight would have been on to win the company coming out here. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's important to note that when we put together packages like that in Missouri, we always do it in a back-ended fashion. In other words, the jobs have to be created before any incentive is given. We are not in the business of giving upfront incentives like some of the other states.
Why not?
You know, because of return on investment. We want a guaranteed return on investment. If you give a large investment to a company up front and then they don't live up to their end of the deal, let's say they promise to create 500 jobs and they only create 100 jobs, then you have no mechanism to get that money back. So we always make sure that the jobs are there first, and then we allow the incentives to move forward. But in this particular package, we also added safeguards that the package we put together sunsetted. I think it sunsets in January or February, so that if this scenario happened the way it did happen, that we don't have those incentives sitting on the books just out there waiting for someone to take advantage of them.
Okay. Let's turn to some other issues this year. It seems like there are a lot of competing priorities, Representative McManus. I mean, Governor Nixon is a Democrat. He wants more money for schools and higher education. Republicans are talking about a significant tax cut. How's all this going to shake out?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, there you go.
In more ways than one, Steve.
Yeah.
I think the governor's, from what I've heard from his offices, he's open to talking about a tax cut that would be targeted, that would be affordable. These are some of the language points that he will use to describe it. There's no question that the Republican majority will be putting forward, I think, several different tax cut alternatives. So we're just going to have to see what those are. And then we, as in the minority, will just be looking at whether or not we can afford them. And I think those are two good questions. Can we afford it? Is it targeted to actually produce jobs? And I think those are going to be the two key points we're going to be looking at.
From your view, can we afford it? There's more money coming into the state this year. Is it time for a tax cut? Or, as Governor Nixon has said so many times, Missouri is already a low tax state. So what's the point?
Well, Steve, you know, and also we haven't fully funded the foundation formula that funds our schools since it's been revised. And so I think, multiple years have gone on where we just haven't been able to fund our schools to the level that we were committed to. And, I think that needs to be a priority. Now, whether we have money left over, I mean, I think we've got to look at our revenue estimates and see what's available. But I think from my vantage point, education has to be a priority.
Senator Sylvie, what is the higher priority for Republicans? Is it fully funding the formula that Kevin just mentioned, or is it giving tax relief to Missourians?
You know, I think this is a question of where you get your tax money from. How do you expand your revenue? And, you know, one philosophy says if you broaden the base by increasing the number of taxpayers, you will increase your revenue to the point of being able to then fund the schools and the other things. Because clearly what we're doing right now hasn't generated enough revenue. The other side is, of course, you raise taxes on your existing taxpayers, which I think is a non-starter. So I think we see this as an opportunity to increase tax revenue long term, not as
– By cutting taxes in the short term.
By cutting taxes in the short term, which then hopefully would encourage more growth in business, more jobs, more people locating in Missouri, and therefore broadening the base of people paying taxes. I think if the tax policy is structured correctly, you do it in such a way that you offer both sides an opportunity to prove themselves right. I mean, what we did in 253, while it was vetoed and while there
the bill last year,
right? That, I'm sorry, yeah, the tax bill last year. You know, while it didn't become law and there were some concerns with it, one of the things I think we got right was we didn't just say, "Here's a tax cut right now, all of it." We phased it in over a series of years, and we put triggers in that the next step wouldn't take effect unless revenue increased. So basically, we're calling everybody's bluff. We're going to say, do tax cuts increase revenue? If so, and we prove that, then we will go the next step and phase in the next one. And if it does, then we will go the next one. If revenue doesn't increase by, I think in that bill it was $100 million a year, then we stop and we say, okay, well, that policy doesn't work. We better figure something else out. So I think it's all about being reasonable in how you structure the tax policy to begin with.
I mean, can you do both? I mean, can you both cut taxes and boost money for education, Kevin?
You know, money is obviously fungible. I mean, if we take $1 from a tax revenue that we had and we give it to education, you know, that's obviously a bonus for our schools. But if we cut taxes, we don't have that dollar. Now, of course, there's other ways that we can get at some of this revenue that we're losing. And one of them is tax credits. We lose, you know, over $500 million a year in tax credits. And that's an ongoing discussion, too, that I think we'll be having this year as to whether or not there's a way that we can reform our tax credit system, make it more efficient, hold people accountable.
And you're talking about things like tax credits for low-income housing, very important to Kansas City. You're talking about tax credits for historic preservation. Again, something that's been very important to the two big cities in Missouri, as well as elsewhere around the state. We hear about this reform to tax credits. It gets a little complicated for a lot of listeners to hang on to. Again, it's been talked about for years and years. Is this year it's going to happen?
You know, again, Steve, this is just one of many big issues.
Yeah.
But I think it's the discussion that needs to happen if we're going to be talking about cutting our tax revenue base. And so I think the two of these things have to be put together and in order to come up with a package, because they're two massive expenditures that could potentially devastate our budget.
But again, you represent Kansas City. Kansas City has depended and counted on those tax credits for so many years. Would you favor a reduction in those credits going forward?
No, not necessarily, Steve. I think, you know, you've mentioned historics and low income. There are other major big programs that we have that, you know, that we can look at. But I think obviously those are two big programs that are important to Kansas City. But there are ways to make them more efficient as well. I mean, I don't think we should just close the door and say, hey, this is something that's important for us right now, and there's no way to improve it, because there always is.
Yeah. You know, Senator Silvey, this is a great example of what Jason Hancock, my colleague in at the Capitol in Jeff City, was writing about in that big package this weekend. When it comes to tax credits, one of the arguments in Jeff City, again, for many years, has been that folks, developers who receive those tax credits, tend to give lots of money in campaign donations to lawmakers. And the reason those tax credits continue as they do is because the donations keep going to lawmakers and sort of shuts off any reform going forward. How true is that?
You know, I don't know that you can necessarily make that a black and white issue. I mean, by the same token, the Missouri Hospital Association and healthcare interests give a ton of money to all of our campaigns, and yet we're not expanding Medicaid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just because somebody gives money to your campaign doesn't mean that all of a sudden their policy becomes law or doesn't become law. I do think that that's an issue that of tax credit reform that has a better chance of being addressed this year than it has in recent years. I think the special session played into that. I think you know, the agreement that the governor reached with some of the members of the Senate on putting a pause essentially on some of those tax credit awards, I think is going to create sufficient pressure to maybe find a reasonable number. I mean, the question here isn't whether we have low income and historic tax credits or whether we don't. The question is whether we spend $150 million or $125 million or whatever the number ends up being negotiated out. I mean, clearly we're still going to be making major investments in those programs, even if the cap is brought down from where it is today.
We're talking about the Missouri General Assembly, the upcoming session. We're visiting with State Senator Ryan Silvey, State Representative Kevin McManus. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org or tweet us @kcurupdate. Let's go to Mike from Kansas City, Missouri, who wants to talk about the border war, something near and dear to Senator Silvey's heart. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. My question is, you know, I live in the Kansas City area, and I'm always hearing this, you know, blah, blah, blah. We got to lower the Missouri taxes in order to compete with Kansas. Well, my question is, and I'll probably – my question is, do they have the same, quote, problem in St. Louis between Illinois and Missouri?
And good question, Mike. I've wondered the same thing at times. Senator?
Okay.
Yeah, no, they really don't. And in fact, Missouri, the Kansas border is very unique in the country in that we have a very homogeneous regional area that's divided by a street. When you look at Illinois and St. Louis, first you have the physical barrier of the river, but
that's
secondly,
right.
Living in East St. Louis, Illinois, and living in St. Louis, Missouri are two completely different worlds. I mean, there's not a lot of people flocking to East St. Louis, Illinois, that want to live there. Whereas Johnson County, Wyandotte County are very similar to Jackson County, Clay County, Platte County. So this is a situation that I think needs to be addressed locally. And I think it's a solution that we've come up with, at least as far as the incentive package goes, with the bill that I filed has been generated here locally to solve a local problem.
And tell us what you want to do exactly, because, again, you've been involved in these negotiations now for any number of months. What do you want to do?
Well, basically what I want to do is, if a business is going to relocate from one of four counties in Kansas, which would be Johnson, Wyandotte, Miami and Douglas, to one of the four counties in the Kansas City, Missouri side, Clay, Platte, Jackson, and Cass. We as Missouri, as a state, would not offer incentives to move that company just across the state line. But we will only do so if it's a bilateral agreement and Kansas agrees to not offer incentives for companies in those four counties on the Missouri side to move to Kansas. So basically, we've been spending millions of dollars as a state, and both states have been spending millions of dollars over the last several years shuffling jobs from one side of the state line to the other with no net economic impact. The jobs already exist here in the region. The people are already here buying food. They're already here paying taxes. There's no new economic activity being generated. That would allow, by not incentivizing that, that would allow us to focus our efforts to bring new jobs to the area that aren't already here. And that's what I think would benefit everybody.
What's your sense of how your idea, this proposal, is being received on the Kansas side of the state line?
You know, I think right now there's a little bit of a feeling of, you know, Missourians and Kansas have this long-going rivalry, right, with, you know, whether it's college basketball or football or,
you name
whatever.
It.
You know, so there's a little bit of this tit-for-tat, you know, we're winning and you're losing and whatever. But, you know, I think over time, as the Hall Family Foundation has done a study and there's now data out there that shows whether there's a net increase on one side of the state line or the other. And I think right now it's Kansas is up 400 jobs net over, I mean, years and years,
yeah,
and multiple millions of dollars to get 400 new jobs. I think eventually everybody's going to realize that it's not good return on investment for anybody. And it needs to take both of us to step up and say, let's just stop this and focus our efforts elsewhere and quit picking on each other.
Are the Kansas folks, Senator, saying they're interested in this?
I think some of them are. And we've structured this in such a way that it would allow the legislature to either pass similar legislation, or perhaps even the governor could take unilateral action with the flexibility that he has on some of his economic programs. So I think that one way or another, the citizens on the Kansas side, I think the business leaders on the Kansas side that I've talked to have been supportive of it. I think hopefully that will filter down into their elected leaders and we'll get something done.
You know, there's already been some questions raised about what your proposal is, because in a sense, you're calling for a two-tier system. You would treat businesses differently. A business in the Kansas City area that wanted to move could not receive an incentive, whereas a business coming from, say, the Chicago area could. And some critics are saying that raises sort of an unequal treatment question that might be winding up in the courts someday.
Yeah, and you know, if it winds up in the courts, it does. But the reality is, the tax code treats people differently all the time. You know, we have enterprise zones where if you move into a specific geographic area, you get a tax benefit, whereas if you move 5 miles outside that area, you don't. You know, this is the same thing in reverse. Instead of moving into an area to get a benefit, we're saying this is a no-fly zone in a
yeah.
sense.
Representative McManus, what do you think? Are you anticipating a change this session, or do you know what to expect here?
Oh, I think in the House we'd be wholly supportive of mm-hmm. Senator Silvey's proposal, and I know that I've co-sponsored legislation similar in the past. In the House we have a bipartisan committee caucus for the Kansas City area, and I'm actually one of the co-chairs of it. I know that we'd be supportive of it. The question will come down, I think, to what Kansas will do.
That's sort of the issue here, isn't it? Okay. 816-235-2888. We're talking about the Missouri General Assembly, what might be happening this session. Let's go to Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. All of the efforts of transparency. So why can't there be some incentive built into the tax advantage programs for development around providing jobs for disadvantaged populations? So much of our TIF money goes to philanthropic organizations that do build our cultural environment, But what about making a part of this stipulation of this job growth for the disadvantaged populations? Why can't that be implemented as part of the requirements?
Yeah, I got you, L. Representative Kevin McManus, what do you think?
Well, I think that's a great idea. You know, we have certain benevolent tax credits already on the books, but nothing particularly like that.
It seems like an obvious one. Why hasn't it happened?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, I think it's something that our budget, we've already talked about the problems that we've had with our budget. You know, ever since I've been in the legislature, we've had massive shortfalls. Mm-hmm. And we've actually had trouble getting our tax credit system under control. Now, whether, you know, adding another one to the books might just, you know, that something like this, I think, is something that could work. But it's just, you know, it's been difficult with our current economic climate. So
I want to get to some issues quickly in just a couple minutes we have left here. So let's just go through a couple on the fast side here. What about expanding Medicaid to take advantage of all this federal money that's available under Obamacare? Once again, Governor Nixon, Senator Sylvie is talking about doing this, expanding Medicaid. Is this going to happen this year or not?
No, I don't see it happening.
Why not?
At all. You know, it comes down to a simple matter of whether or not we can afford it. You know, everybody likes to focus on all of the federal money.
But it's 100% federal money for at least the first few years.
Right. And then after that, we have to pay, you know, 10%. So, Steve, if you were going to give me a $4 million house and say that I could live there for 2 years and then after that I have to come up with 10% or $400,000, I'm a smart enough guy with the numbers to know that I don't have $400,000 and I can't take your house.
Even though it's a 90 to 10 match.
I'd love to live in that house. I can't afford it.
Okay. Representative McManus?
You know, I think we probably just disagree on this. I mean, I think what we can do is use the federal money to be a catalyst to create efficiencies in our current Medicaid system and actually save the state money. I think by expanding Medicaid, actually, we're putting our budget in the black. We're making money by doing this. And, you know, we can actually use this opportunity and improve our system versus just giving the money to another state.
But still, yeah, Kevin, polls show that Obamacare is so unpopular in Missouri. Do you expect this legislature to go ahead and expand Medicaid this year?
I do not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And Senator Sylvie, you already said you don't think it's going to happen either.
No, I don't see any way it's happening. First of all, I don't think that any of us really believe that we're, quote unquote, making money, as the representative said. You know, first of all, people need to remember federal money isn't free. It's tax money that we pay. And right now, because the federal government is such a huge deficit, it's money that doesn't exist. I mean, this is money on borrowed time. I mean, we don't have enough money to cover our bills at the federal level. So to continue to dig that hole deeper at the federal level just to benefit us at the state level doesn't do us as national taxpayers a favor.
Okay. The Kansas City School District desperately wants a change to a law that requires unaccredited school districts like Kansas City's to pay for the transportation and tuition of students who wind up transferring to accredited districts. Kevin, the law threatens to sink the Kansas City district just as surely as it sunk one in St. Louis. You all looked at this law last year and didn't make a change. What are the prospects this year?
Steve, I think it's better this year. And the reason is because I think we've gotten to this critical point where we've got to absolutely make a decision and do something. I think there's incredible pressure from the suburban districts as well as from the inner cities, the Kansas City, Missouri school district reps to actually make a change because no one likes this current law.
Both Democrats and Republicans.
Correct.
Senator Sylvie, Ryan, you agree with that?
I agree. I think that this is the year that we've hit critical mass on that issue, both on both sides of the state line, but also urban and suburban.
Yeah. You know, one political question. There's been a big change in Governor Jay Nixon now in his second term. He was very conservative by most analysts sort of looking at this in his first term. Republicans at times even found it difficult to criticize him. Now lawmakers tell me he's acting a whole lot more like a regular Democrat and pushing more traditionally Democratic priorities. Ryan, why the change? What's caused a switch in him, at least from your vantage point?
Well, I think it's simply that he knows he doesn't have to face the voters again. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the makeup of the legislature, we're 2/3 Republican in each chamber. If he governed his first term the way that he acts now, I think he knows he wouldn't have been reelected.
Yeah. What do you think, Kevin?
You know, I wish I could see into the heart of the governor, but I can't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he thinks he's doing the right thing. I certainly agree with him on the policy issues more often than not. So, you know, I have no idea, I guess, what he's looking forward in the future. I can't tell you.
So it sounds like this is going to be a pretty good session for reporters to cover. A lot of good stuff going on. A lot of stories worth writing about here.
We'll try to make it worth your time.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. I want to thank State Senator Ryan Silvey, a Kansas City Republican, State Representative Kevin McManus, a Kansas City Democrat. Thank you both for coming in and giving us a preview of what's going on here.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank
again.
You, Steve.
You bet, guys. Well, time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll just turn to the Kansas side of the state line. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's conversation with our TV critics about the new TV premieres or our look at the life of Crosby Kemper Jr., you can find that at kcur.org. Well, let's now head west along I-70 and talk about the Kansas legislature meeting in Topeka in just the next few weeks. With us to talk about what's ahead this session, our State Representative John Rubin. He's a Shawnee Republican. And Representative, nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you, Stephen.
State Representative Stephanie Clayton's also here. She's an Overland Park Republican. And Stephanie, nice to have you, Representative.
Thank you, Steve.
Welcome here. Yeah. What about a law, John, to outlaw below zero weather?
I'm all for that.
All for that. Stephanie, you for that too?
Yes, I also support such.
Yeah, I think there we go. We're getting off to a good start here. Well, let's begin with the newly renovated Capitol building and the new visitor center, which just opened last week. Have you guys had a chance to see the new thing yet or not?
I haven't been there in the last couple of weeks, but I saw it when it was near completion. It is a beautiful renovation. Folks are really going to love the visitor center.
The scaffolding's down. The cranes are away, I think, if I'm told correctly.
Yes, that's all done except for some landscaping that is held off till next spring.
Yeah. Representative Clayton, $330 million to do all this. Was it worth it in your view to get this done?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. It was worth the money, you think?
Yes.
Yeah. John, what do you think?
Well, I would have preferred
$332
million is a lot of money, but a lot of the costs involved were because you're renovating a very old building and you had to preserve the historical significance of much of it, and that explains the cost. And, of course, it was spread out over in excess of 10 years. That said, I would have liked to have found a way to have done it more cheaply, but I wasn't in the legislature when the decision was made.
Yeah. But it's done, and so onward we go here, right?
Yeah.
Well, the only way really to begin a conversation about the issues in 2014 is to begin with, I guess, the elephant in the room, which is this huge decision that seems close to be coming down from the state Supreme Court about school funding, school finance. Representative Rubin, when do you expect the court to issue its ruling? When's this thing going to come?
That's anybody's guess. There were those who thought that we'd have had the ruling before now, before the session started. That's obviously not going to happen. There are those who think the ruling will come down early in session. There are others who think that the ruling may not come down until the 2014 session is completed. And perhaps even then the court might choose an avenue other than issuing a binding decision, for example, remanding it to district court. So it's really anybody's guess right now. If I had to wager on it, my guess would be that we're not going to see the Supreme Court's decision until after the 2014 session concludes.
Oh, really? Given the fact that hundreds of millions of dollars potentially are at stake here, given the fact that this could turn the legislative session completely upside down, Stephanie Clayton, do you think should the court be hinting to you all as to when it's going to rule here so that you all can sort of prepare your session accordingly here?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
We shouldn't know what they're doing at all. That would mm-hmm. be unethical.
A violation of
yes.
of separation of the two branches of the system of government, right?
Yes, when that decision comes, it comes, and then we continue from then on.
What do you think the court's going to say? I mean, the betting line among insiders who sort of watch all this stuff is that the court will come out and say, you all have to spend hundreds of millions of more on public schools. What do you think they're going to say?
Well, if you look at some of the arguments that were made last fall when you had some of those presentations, it's possible. And like I said, I absolutely cannot know what they would do. But I think it's plausible that the court may order us to conduct our own study. Some of the prior decisions were based on a study, an Augen-Blickenmeier study that was done.
I remember that term very well.
Mm-hmm, yeah. By a previous legislature. Neither Representative Rubin and I were serving on that legislature. So some of the argument is that a previous legislature can't compel the current legislature what to spend. And so I do like the idea of us having to do a completely different study. But again, I cannot say what the court will do.
But
so
wouldn't that be
wait.
Kind of anticlimactic, given the fact this court, this state Supreme Court, just ruled a few years ago on this question? Most of those members of the court are still there. Why wouldn't they just come out? Again, I know I'm asking you to speculate here, but another study? Why wouldn't they just come out and say, hey, we ordered you all 7 years ago to do X, Y, and Z. Do it again.
Steve, as a legislator, I prefer anticlimactic decisions. I think that we should actually be boring all of you tremendously.
Yes. Yes.
That means that we're doing our job.
Yeah.
This is not about anything dramatic. This is about doing what's right. Now, as far as what the court does, again, it is not for me to say and it's not for me to surmise. It is for me to wait and to decide once the decision comes down.
But John Rubin, if they would say anything other than what they said 7 or 8 years ago, again, with the same court, with the same issue, how surprised would you be?
I would be somewhat surprised by that. But Steve, you know, we were talking just a moment ago about separation of powers between the legislative and judiciary embedded in the Constitution. So first and foremost, that is the initial consideration that we're going to have to address should the court rule again that we have to inject a specific additional amount of money into school finance in Kansas.
Johnny, meaning what exactly?
I think it could precipitate, and I don't want to be too dramatic about this, but I think it could precipitate a constitutional crisis. It is clear under our constitutional scheme in Kansas, same as with the federal government, that the power to appropriate money is exclusively within the province of the legislature. So the courts can certainly hear school funding cases. They can certainly issue opinions that say that they don't think that that the legislature is funding schools adequately or sufficiently or suitably, to use the constitutional term. But when they go beyond that and order, which they could do in this case, based on the plaintiff's complaint, order a specific amount of additional money to be added, that inveighs on the legislature's province, and that is appropriation of money. It is we that have to do the balancing act, devoting limited resources to all the vital state functions, the crucial state functions that we have to fund, public safety, roads and highways, so many other things. It is we in the legislature,
yes,
that are answerable to the public at the ballot box based on those decisions.
So,
not
just, to be clear, John, what you're suggesting here is that it's possible that if the court comes out and says you all, the legislature, has to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more, the legislature might look at that order and say, that's, you're exceeding your boundaries. We're not going to do it. And that would set up some sort of very direct showdown between the legislature and the courts.
I think that is a possibility. What we would say is thank you very much for your advice. We will take your opinion on these matters, consider them along with opinions from all other segments of Kansas, of the Kansas public and of interested parties, and we will make our decision because the Constitution tells us it is our decision as to how much to fund schools for in the next budget.
Stephanie, if a crisis like that were to occur, how would that be resolved? What happens then?
If a crisis such as that were to occur, it would stand to reason that the legislature would listen to each other, listen to their constituents, and work together to keep Kansas running properly. So that would be my hope, if such a thing occurs.
Could you envision the court, you know, doing something like ordering the Capitol to shut down or ordering public schools to close because the legislature wasn't following one of its orders?
I suppose that it could. But again, if the legislature is conducting ourselves in a mature and professional manner, it certainly will not get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Do you think schools, Stephanie Clayton, are they underfunded right now?
I do not think that we are funding them to the level that we the previous legislature had set statutorily, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is ultimately the court's decision, not telling us, hey, you need to fund it to this level, but you set a level, you aren't doing what you said you would. I don't think it's them saying you need to fund it to this arbitrary point. I think that based on the previous financial study, the legislature said, all right, we'll do this, and then we stopped. So that's the issue at hand, in my opinion. But again, lots of things to play out, and I think that keeping calm is really the best thing we can do.
John Rubin, same question. Do you think the schools, the public schools, are being underfunded right now or not?
I do not think that is the case. I don't want to throw a whole lot of numbers and figures at you here, Steve, but basically let me just say a couple of things. Overall, funding for K through 12 education in Kansas is at an all-time high. We provide over 50% of the state general fund budget, currently about 50.5% for K through 12 education. Where does that place us nationally? That places us in the top four states out of all 50 states nationally in the percentage of our budget that we devote to funding K through 12 education. The national average is around 34.7%.
So we're 17 points above that, 16 points above that. Yeah.
Exactly. And let me just address a couple other points that were just raised. With regard to what remedies or what orders the Supreme Court could issue for complying with their order, everyone needs to bear in mind that the Kansas legislature is not a party to the school funding lawsuit. And therefore, whatever the court would order could not be binding on the legislature because we're not a party to the litigation. It would be my hope that the court would not threaten what they did with the Montoy decision in 2005, and that would be to shut down schools. That's would be for the court to decide, but that would be the wrong course to take. One other point I want to make: whatever the discussion is as to whether we're funding the public education in Kansas at an appropriate level. And again, that's a core function of state government, but not the only core function. There's two things to bear in mind. If the court were to grant what the plaintiffs are asking for in the way of increased funding for schools without any increase in taxes, which there will be no tax increases in Kansas in 2014, I can virtually assure you of that, particularly in an election year. Then every other core state function would have to take a sizable multi-million, in some case, billion-dollar hit. Hmm. I'm talking about every other core function that the state has. These are the balancing considerations that we have to go through in the legislature.
But again, the issue on the table is only, if I understand it right, is sort of the court would be saying, legislature, you have to live up to the promises that you made in recent years. But it's the legislature's commitment to funding schools that's on the table here, right, John?
Well, that is correct. What I'd like to do, and the other thing I was going to say was, what I think all parties can agree to, whatever our position is on whether we're adequately funding schools currently, is that the most unwise way to handle the problem is to have a what we have now, which is a complex, almost impossible to understand school finance formula.
It's very complex, I agree.
That winds up getting us into court all of the time. Mm-hmm. Wherever that money needs to be spent, it needs not to be spent on lawyers and litigation in court. I would like to see a constitutional amendment replacing the word suitable education in the Constitution with a specific discussion. Let's have that broad-based discussion across Kansas this year among all stakeholders as to what we think the proper level of funding of public schools in Kansas should be. What some states have done is actually put in the Constitution that every year X amount, X percent of the state general fund budget will be devoted to K through 12 education.
I mean,
we could consider something like that.
I don't want to belabor this, but this is so important for the future of Kansas. Representative Clayton, you know, this notion that, you know, there needs to be a study to determine what is suitable, adequate education, the state's been down that road in recent years. We've done studies. We've paid big money for those studies. And the issue here on the table is, you know, there's a standard that's been set for how much money should be going to schools. The legislature isn't fully funding that standard. Instead, it opted to cut taxes the last couple of years. And one of the big issues here on the table is whether that decision not to fully fund schools as was promised versus cutting taxes is what is being litigated right now, right?
Yes. And it stands to reason that when you make tax shifts that have adverse effects on revenue, that it makes funding schools more difficult.
I mean, and John, again, going back to this point, you all opted to cut taxes as opposed to spending more money on schools. That goes without question, right?
Right. That is what we did. But it is with a view to increasing revenue. People conflate taxes and revenues. And what supply-siders like myself believe that when the tax cuts that we have enacted, and I applaud Governor Brownback for taking the lead on this issue, and I've fully supported it, if we get to the point where we can actually eliminate income taxes in Kansas in favor of other types of taxation, that the number of new businesses, expanded businesses, and new jobs in Kansas will actually cause an overall increase in revenue because of the increased economic activity that will provide all necessary revenues for all core state functions, education and everything
else. That's
what
you're hoping for.
That's what I'm hoping for, and I think that's the direction we're headed.
If our listeners are just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking now about the Kansas side of the state line, what's going to be happening in Topeka during this upcoming legislative session. We're visiting with State Representative John Rubin from Shawnee, State Representative Stephanie Clayton from Overland Park. Both are Republicans. If you want to join our conversation here, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or you can tweet us at KCUR. Up to date. Are these big tax cuts, as Representative Rubin was just talking about, Representative Clayton, that the legislature adopted a couple of years ago, are the tax cuts working in your view? Are the jobs being created at the pace you had hoped for when those tax cuts were put into place?
Well, I am a somewhat newer legislator than John Rubin, but what I can say is that I have seen right in Johnson County, the area that both of us represent, the successful economic model. And you have a tremendously successful economic model in Johnson County when you have excellent schools that create a wonderful quality of life and bring in the best workforce. I think you've seen Johnson County's economy, our local service-based economy, exploding in the last 30 years. And as a product of the Shawnee Mission education system, and as one who sends my own children there, I think I can say why. Mm-hmm. So I know that we have a good return on investment with that Johnson County economic model. I don't know if we have a return on investment with supply side. We have to wait for that. I tend to be conservative in the fact that I like to go with a success model that I have seen demonstrated before my very eyes.
Mm-hmm. Representative Rubin, are the tax cuts working from your vantage point?
They are. I unfortunately didn't bring the exact numbers with me, but the numbers do demonstrate that we have grown in the Johnson County area and in other border states, border counties, excuse me, to Missouri. We have grown jobs by several thousand while Missouri has lost jobs. That might be a segue into another question might want to ask about the border war, and I have some comments about that. But I think we need to go all the way. I'm actually a fair tax proponent. And I'll be introducing legislation in the 2014 session to replace most existing Kansas state taxes with a fair tax structured to ensure that the level of revenues generated match or exceed what we currently have. But I think when corporations, not just Kansas corporations, but corporations nationwide, realize they can come to Kansas without worrying about corporate income tax and make business decisions based on what's best for their business
and
not the tax consequences, then we can
By fair
really
tax, you're talking grow. About a consumption tax.
It would be a consumption
Get
tax.
Get rid of the income tax.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I do support that. We'll be introducing it.
And just to be clear, in November, the jobless rate in the state was 5.1%. It was down from 5.9% in August. That rate appears to be going the right direction. The national rate at 7%. What do those numbers mean to you, Stephanie Clayton?
Honestly, I'm not really looking at those numbers at this point. I'm thinking more of a general philosophy. I'm thinking of what gets businesses to come to this area. Primarily, obviously, what gets businesses to move to Johnson County and hopefully employ my constituents. That's one of my top priorities. And when I speak with business owners, what they discuss is what gets people to this area is not so much the tax climate, but you get their spouses to want to move here. If we take a great risk and if we make Johnson County less nice, you're going to be putting our main economic builder at risk.
Meaning if we don't fund public schools adequately, we're taking a gamble there.
Yes, and I don't like to gamble with the jobs of the people in my district. I find that irresponsible.
John Rubin, there's an implication there that you are gambling with the quality of public schools in the state of Kansas.
And I would disagree with that. I think by reducing and eventually eliminating the income tax in Kansas will grow revenues to support schools. I'm chair of the House Corrections and Juvenile Justice Committee. I also have to worry about spending also for corrections for public safety. We are currently at excess capacity in our state correctional institutions. We are over our population limit slightly, and we're trying to address those issues as well. If we don't do something about it, we could face a court order in the future with regard to early release of prisoners or other things if we don't build more bed space or look at other alternatives to address the problem.
I want to get to the border war just briefly because we talked about it in our first half with our Missouri side state lawmakers. Both of them made the point that the ball seems to be in Kansas's court. Will Kansas go along with a proposal to sort of end the border war and not offer incentives to companies that move from one side of the state line to the other? Representative Rubin, what's going to happen with that proposal?
That's a very good question. I'm actually going to be attending, perhaps Representative Clayton is as well, this afternoon, an economic development meeting out at the Lenexa Chamber of Commerce, where we're going to be discussing the proposals that I heard your Missouri legislators talking about earlier in your program. We'll take a look at that. And I am not oblivious to the fact that the overall financial well-being of the whole metropolitan area is beneficial to Johnson County. That's recognized. However, I represent the citizens of Kansas. My first duty, my first obligation is to their welfare, jobs for Kansans, and the rest. I do, for that reason, again, I think the problem with the border war is the granting of tax incentives to lure businesses one way or other across the state line. The fair tax would eliminate that. Mm-hmm. If you eliminate the income tax.
But we're not talking about the fair tax right now. We're talking about the border war,
right,
and will Kansas buy off on this idea or not?
I don't know that we'll buy off on that idea. But if we eliminate the income tax, we eliminate all need for tax incentives.
I want to thank State Representative John Rubin from Shawnee, State Representative Stephanie Clayton from Overland Park. Thank you both for coming in and talking about the upcoming session. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet.
Thank you, Steve.
More information about our broadcast, just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.